Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Not only do our callers and our emailers and our chatters, thanks to the moderators, the bloggers.
I was sitting here reading, not paying attention, and it's time for the show, and my gosh, how could I not be on time? How could I ever neglect you, my faithful listeners? Thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show today. I'm feeling good. Got a couple of great guests in store for you today. We should have a good show, and of course, you know what will make the show even better is if you join in. We hope you do. And you can do that by giving us a call at 866-546-5254. We do always hope you'll join in on the program. I hope you had a good weekend. It was another hot, humid, somewhat rainy weekend here in Southwest Florida. And I know lots of people having some dreadfully hot weather all the way around the country. So, except the folks over in the Galveston area, I guess they got cooled down a bit today with about 10 inches of rain. And but as usual, the people on the news making a huge deal out of that Edward story, like we haven't seen some wind and a little rain before. My, they get carried away with that stuff, don't they? We've got a couple of great interviews with you to share with you today. Dr. Meryl Nass, a lady who is well-versed on this anthrax problem. A colleague knew this Mr. Ivins that died. And she's going to talk to us about what she thinks happened there. Personally, I don't know about you, but I think something smells in this anthrax case. It smells to high heaven, in my mother's words, as she used to say. So we'll talk to her about that. And in the second hour, we're going to have Tyson Slocum. Tyson's been a frequent guest on the show from Citizen.org. And we're going to talk about this drill. Let's, for God's sake, drill. Let's stay in the house and with no microphones and tell whoever listen. Let's drill all day and all night. Oh, my God. I tell you. And, of course, Since we spoke last, we had a couple of more banks fail, small banks. We hope that settles down a little bit. We'll talk about the economy. We'll talk a little bit about the war today. We'll talk a little bit about the election. One thing I wanted to jump right in on today, and if you forgive me for being a bit off the subject to start the program, a year ago, and I know all of you remember about a year ago is when all this started, economic stuff started hitting us kind of hard. Most folks would have thought that the outcome of the presidential election a year ago would probably hinge on the war, and that economic concerns would probably be left to the state and local campaigns. But as you know, and I don't have to tell you this, this is politics, and a year can be an eternity, and a whole lot's changed in that year. And now tens of millions of people are actually facing very, very troubling economic times. And this has been in the works for a long, long time. And the political campaigns, both Obama and McNasty, are both running around trying to figure out what kind of a message they want to put out on the economy. So something they'll be able to actually back up if they should get elected. And I'm always concerned about the economy. I don't know a lot of folks in my particular circles, social circles, who have a huge safety net and a whole lot of savings. My social circle is basically made up of hardworking, good, hardworking Americans, average American. And when prices go up and income stays about the same, we all feel the pain and we struggle to adjust to that. And I'm no exception. And the same is true of the organizations that I work with. Money gets tight. And folks are no longer able to make donations to volunteer organizations. They're no longer able to make donations to our show, for example. And a recent news report on the increased use of gleaning by food pantries has got me to thinking about those people who are feeling the squeeze for the first time. There's a whole lot of people right now suffering that have never suffered before economically. There are many, many people in this country who are facing hunger for themselves or their family who would never have dreamed they'd be in this situation. And the numbers of Americans getting food stamps is at an all-time high right now. And the right-wingers screaming, "Food stamp? Those lazy bastards, we shouldn't be giving food stamps out for anybody." That's what they would be saying, of course. And folks are struggling. They're struggling to pay for their house payments. They're struggling to pay for their fuel, their energy, their utilities. And many times finding themselves not able to put a decent meal on their table for themselves and their family. And I would hope that this new first-time economic reality for so many people would help a little bit to try and bridge that gap of understanding that exists between the haves and the have-nots, because right now some of the haves are getting forced into this too. But too often news reports center on the notion that hunger isn't supposed to happen to these people. Well, it is happening, and you know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about educated, working, clean, articulate, solid people who aren't supposed to be on food stamps, right? The hard-working Americans have kept their side of the bargain, and they deserve better. They've earned a full stomach and a roof over their head. And, you know, as the right-wingers are going to tell us, and I just heard Limbaugh say again yesterday, misery's the wages of the lazy. And who's hunger for? Who deserves poverty? And oh yeah, those other people, those lazy people, those willfully ignorant people who aren't happy unless they're asking for a handout or getting a free ride, right? Well, it's wrong. And most of us could be at risk in a matter of weeks, if not days. A job gets cut, your car breaks down, a certain bill becomes due, you got a water heater go bad, a child gets sick in the family, and suddenly you don't have enough money for groceries. Credit cards are maxed out, nowhere to turn. And a lot of people are living paycheck to paycheck. And just a slight problem in their house budget, their home budget, can have a huge impact on their lives and their ability to survive without some manner of assistance. And even now, even with more Americans applying for food stamps or visiting food banks. Same food banks they used to donate to. Some of these people are losing their homes or having to adjust where they live to fit their new economic reality. And they're cutting back on everything but the basics. Even now, the idea persists that hunger is what you get when you don't do the right thing, and that poverty happens to those lazy people who deserve it. And I used to think that the trick to spinning economic policy was to make the masses believe in the possibility of there being a chicken in every pot, like Roosevelt said. But now you hear a lot of the right-wingers saying, well, those with an empty pot don't deserve a chicken. And the main point of me telling you all this is to explain that this past week, I experienced something so heart-wrenching that I hesitated to talk to you about it. Something so awful that I had to find a private place to go and cry after it happened. A friend of mine, whom I've known for 9 or 10 years, came to me and asked me to borrow $20 for food for him and his wife and for a prescription. I've known this person to be hardworking and responsible and completely dedicated to his family. His business is failing. There are no jobs available to meet these family needs. And he's one of those people who's upside down in his house. Not really upside down, but you can't sell it in this market. He's considered overqualified by many low-paying employers. And up till now, up until the economy went bust, he was always able to do just fine. Never had a lot, but he always able to provide for his family. And the look in his eyes when he asked me to borrow $20 was gut-wrenching. I gave him the $18 I had in my billfold, and I apologized it couldn't be more. You see, I had some groceries in my pantry and in a refrigerator enough to last out the week. And he was needing food for his family that evening. And I was sad for him. And I was sad for the millions of others who were facing the same problems. Because who knows? In a few short weeks it could be me asking. I hope not. But who knows what lies in store for working people right now? Who knows? And is it any wonder people are edgy and they're fearful? And is it any wonder you see panic in people's faces and concern? Is it any wonder you see people walking around retail stores and buying little, if anything, at all? I don't know where this will all end. But when a friend asked me to borrow $20 for food, I know that we as a nation are not in the right place. I know things have to change. And I'm completely ready for someone from the right to call up and give me that good old pull yourself up by your bootstraps speech. But today I wouldn't listen to it. I wouldn't listen to it because I know good people who've pulled themselves up by their bootstraps their whole lives. And they're getting stomped on right now by this economy through no fault of their own. Different economic circumstances leave people in different places, and many people are fortunate enough to have plenty. Many people are fortunate enough through their hard work and their industriousness and through good fortune are doing just fine. But not everybody's had the good fortune others have had, for whatever reason. And I just I just wanted to talk a little bit about having one of your good friends come to you in that circumstance. Very disheartened by that. And I know he was very disheartened by that. And not only having to ask me, but a few others as well, just to get through the week. I think it's the first time someone that I know and think so much of has been in that circumstance, and would that I could provide what he needs, but I cannot. And there are millions of people across this country in the same shape right now. And many of us can't do anything about it. And some can. And as we've seen the balance of wealth in this country shift into the pockets of a few, a little bit from so many, each of so many, went into the pockets of a few. And that's the way it's shaken out in this country right now. And that's not the America I know and I love. Things are different. Things are dire for a lot of people. And I just want to encourage everybody to please, help everybody you can. I know many of you do. Keep your hands extended with help to your friends and family and whoever may need it. But I just wanted to share that with you. The traumatic experience for me to hear that from a friend, and it was a traumatic experience for him to ask for assistance as well. But desperation will cause people to do things they don't want to do. Anyway, just wanted to share that with you. Mindful of the fact that there are so many people in the country right now in that desperate shape. And linking that to how important this election is. And I wanted to remind you that one of the candidates running for president right now, one of the candidates is so far out of touch with the reality of what's going on in this country that he does not deserve to be the president of the United States. He does not deserve your vote. He does not deserve even any consideration for your vote. And if you want to know what one of the candidates thinks of our current economic position, this man running for president of the United States, listen to this.
Senator McCain, are Americans better off than they were 8 years ago?
I think you could argue that Americans overall are better off because we have had a pretty good, prosperous time with low unemployment and low inflation and a lot of good things have happened. A lot of jobs have been created.
That's one of the candidates for the presidency of the United States. Saying that overall, I think you could argue that we are better off for the last 8 years of George Bush. Now, I don't know how you feel about that, but that's insanity. What you just heard right there is the very definition of insanity. And it troubles me that millions of people in the United States would listen to that man say what he just said, knowing that there are millions and millions of people hurting in this country, probably more people hurting than any time since the Great Depression. More people losing their homes, more people losing their cars, more people with huge medical bills, all of that. It confounds me that anybody, let alone someone supposedly intelligent enough and caring enough to run for the presidency of the office of the United States, the highest office we have to offer. Somebody running for that office could say you could argue that things are better off now than they were 8 years ago. My God, people. What gives? How could anybody say that? How could anybody say that?
Senator McCain, are Americans better off than they were 8 years ago?
I think you could argue that Americans overall are better off because we have had a pretty good, prosperous time with low unemployment and low inflation, and a lot of good things have happened. A lot of jobs have been created.
A lot of jobs created. A lot of good things. I think overall you could say things are better off. Wow. It's fantastic. Fantastic that anybody could even give even the slightest of consideration for this man for the presidency of the United States. He is not in any way qualified to be president of the United States for the reasons that a person ought to be qualified. This man has no qualifications. He has none. He has no understanding of what is happening to the economy in this country right now. He's denied it all along. He's denied that the people of this country are facing dire economic conditions. And yet, there are, in fact, millions of people ready to line up and pull the lever for this man to be our president. I cannot understand it. I will never understand it. I don't know. I just don't know what to say about it. It does. It truly does confound me, and it leaves me extremely frustrated, as I know it does so many of you. Extremely frustrated. So many things that John McCain says are so far, just so far off of, away from reality. I don't know. I don't want to belabor the point, but I'm just blown away by it. Here's another John McCain. I plan on talking about him a bit today in between guests. Is this man even associated with reality? Here's John McCain debating himself. You'll hear this in two different voices because it recorded at two different times. So I think you'll be able to understand. I took this off some video, but I think you understand. This is John McCain debating two different realities with himself.
The fact is that I have agreed with President Bush far more than I have disagreed.
Now, you'll hear from my opponent's campaign in every speech, in every interview, every press release, that I'm running for President Bush's third term.
And on the transcendent issues, the most important issues of our day, I have been totally in agreement and support of President Bush.
You'll hear every policy of the president is described as the Bush-McCain policy.
So have we had some disagreements on some issues, particularly domestic issues? Yes.
Why does Senator Obama believe it's so important to repeat that idea over and over again?
But I will argue my conservative record voting with anyone's, and I will also submit that my support for President Bush has been active and very impassioned on issues that are important to the American people.
Because he knows it's very difficult to get Americans to believe something that they know is false.
And I'm particularly talking about the war on terror, the war in Iraq, national security, national defense, support of men and women in the military, fiscal discipline, a number of other issues. So I strongly disagree with any assertion that I've been more at odds with the President of the United States than I have been in agreement with.
So John McCain telling us that he is exactly like George Bush, and that he isn't exactly like George Bush. Folks, the record shows that John McCain will be a clone of Junior Bush, maybe worse. That's what the record actually shows. The folly of having John McCain tell one audience of actual conservatives that he's agrees with Mr. Bush most of the time, and then telling another audience of people that he's trying to get to vote for him, trying to get over into his camp, saying, well, I'm certainly not hooked up with that Bush guy. And did you realize, speaking of wanting to keep some distance from the Bush administration, and isn't it odd? Don't you think it's bizarre what we're facing right now with the Bush administration? Number one, they're telling us that no, they won't be the third term, and yet they're running like hell from them. Don't want to be close to them at all. Don't want them. I bet you they've done what they can to try and keep Bush from even speaking at the convention, but of course they gotta let him speak at the convention. Cheney's not been invited to speak at the convention, the Republican convention, and he will not. But of course you know who will speak, and who is the odds-on favorite to give the keynote, and that would be Mr. Joe Lieberman. Yes, Joe Lieberman will speak. Now I'm gonna tell you one thing. If he does the keynote speak at the Republican convention, if the Democrats don't kick his ass off of every committee that he's on and dump his ass out of the caucus, then they are fools. No matter what. No matter if they needed him for a supermajority or what, they would be fools to keep that no good. Well, I'll stop there. And guess who else is not going to be at the Republican convention? My goodness. Their most senior senator. Isn't that pitiful? An 84-year-old man who's been in the United States Senate for, what, 40 years, is it? Not going to be at the Republican convention. My word. And, of course, I'm talking about Senator Ted Stevens from Alaska. He's not going to be at the convention. Well, that makes me sad. It really does. Makes me sad that Senator Ted Stevens will not be at the Republican convention. We're going to be at the Democratic convention. Gosh, I was thinking just the other day, it was 3 weeks from Sunday. From last Sunday, we'll be heading out to Denver. And I'm looking forward to it. Perhaps I'll see some of you there. And if any of you are there, if any of you are going to be who are delegates or just going to be in town visiting the convention, why, I hope you'll come and visit. Looking forward to it. We're going to be inside the Pepsi Center, set up and doing the Guy James Show from in there. I don't know how many people are going to be on Radio Row. Quite a few, from what I understand. I even hear Sean Hannity's going to be there. If he is, I have got to find a way. I don't know whether it'll take alcohol, drugs, or what. I've got to find a way to just stay away from him. It would be just too tempting for him to walk up to me to walk up to him and tell him exactly what I think of him. I have no regard for the man whatsoever. He's probably the most hardcore right wing zealot there is. Limbaugh's just a whore. But I think Hannity believes what he says, and I think he's most likely the worst propagandist of them all. Just a dastardly individual, and he's going to actually show his face at the Democratic National Convention. I don't know why they let him in. I guess legally they have to or something. I don't know why they'd waste credentials on him, is what I'm saying. I have friends who did not get credentials to the convention. And here Sean Hannity ends up with one. That's not real smart, I don't think. Why the hell do we need Sean Hannity at the Democratic National Convention? Can anybody explain that to me? Is there a good reason for that? I don't know. I don't know what it might be. Well, we're going to pause for a quick break. Hey, a friend of mine from Brussels, Belgium, sent me some music that he did that he hopes you will enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. And it's from a gentleman by the name of John Lord. He lives in Brussels. He's highly interested in American politics. And he wrote and produced and did all this. So we're gonna play one of these songs for you right now. It's called Hey, Yes, We Can.
I stand before you today to announce my candidacy for president.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Yeah, baby, you're running a respectful campaign, all right. Didn't we say, did anybody believe that from the beginning when the man said he was going to run his respectful campaign? Did any of you believe that John McCain would actually do that? Did any of you believe that any Republican candidate, no matter which one of them, came out of that silly group that they had? Did anybody believe that a single one of them would run a respectful, decent campaign without script voting somebody or the like? Did anybody think so? I didn't think. We all know what Republican campaign strategies are about. We know what their tactics are. We know that no matter what, they're going to get in the gutter immediately and start throwing slime. And hey, it's worked for them. And I believe this has worked even for McCain so far. Is some of the polls are showing that his negative campaigning is working for him. So you know what that means? That means there'll just be a whole lot more of it coming up. Nobody's better at it. It started off with Lee Atwater years ago during the Bush 41 campaign. He learned how to be a slimy mudslinger. It worked for him. Ask Mike Dukakis how well it worked for him. Of course, it worked for Bushy Boy twice. Ask John Kerry, ask Al Gore about being slimed. Both of them know full well what it's like. Perfectly decent, honorable men had their reputations sullied and tarnished by the right, who also said that they would run a decent campaign at that time. They don't know how to run a decent campaign. If they did, they would never win. But they know this negativism. They know this negative campaigning. This slime bucket campaign that's associated with every Republican presidential candidate, they know that that works. They know, and dare I say it, that the American public is stupid enough. And I'm probably the only one saying this. I know everybody dances around it and all. I'm not going to dance around it any longer. As you know, I probably never have danced around it. I don't want to call these people ignorant. I don't want to call these people stubborn anymore. I don't want to call them misinformed anymore. I just want to call them just plain old stupid. Because that's what it is. That's what it is to me. It doesn't seem like they're misinformed. It seems to me like they do not want to accept the truth. It doesn't seem like they haven't run across the truth. They just do not want to accept it. That makes them stupid. And the Republicans fully realize that they can tell most of the American public that they can turn water into wine, and the public will believe it. And you stop and think of the advantage that they have with their media megaphone right now. What I wouldn't give to have 20 million listeners a day, Limbaugh, so I could set the record straight on a few of these issues. Not propagandize them. Educate them with the truth. You know, for example, we have Limbaugh saying tire pressure doesn't matter. His listeners believe that. They've got this big campaign going on, passing out air pressure gauges to people, making this laughable about what Obama said about keeping your engine tuned and your tires properly inflated. And statistics do show that that would save more gas than their offshore drilling that they want to do. And yet they want to laugh at that, and they'll continue to do that. He says drilling off the coast will alleviate all of our oil problems. They believe that. Anwar drilling. It'll halt the import of oil, to hear him tell it. Let's build nuclear power plants on every corner. That'll halt the import of oil. And they believe it. They actually believe it. They believe that if we pass out more leases to these companies, let them have all the leases that they want, which amounts to nothing more than a big piggy bank savings bank for the oil companies, they can stock that away so nobody else can get it except themselves later on. That's all it is. Won't do a thing, won't do a damn thing to drop the price of oil right now, won't lower the price of gas, and yet millions of people believe it. Why? Because Rush said so. I had to laugh today. He was talking about, he wasn't going to go to the convention because his cochlear ear implants, he couldn't hear if he went there. And I thought, and why is that, Rush? Why do you have those cochlear ear implants? Come again? Want to tell us? Want to remind us why you have those? Because you drugged yourself so much that you couldn't hear anymore. You drugged yourself with painkillers until... Yeah, your ears blew out on you. You've got that kind of good judgment, that kind of intelligence, and yet... 20 million people a day listen to what you have to say. I don't know. Let's pause for a break, and we will get our first guest on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, so don't go anywhere.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. And as promised, we have Dr. Meryl Noss on the phone with us right now. I believe she's coming to us from Bar Harbor, Maine, as a matter of fact. And she's a renowned expert on this anthrax story that we've been talking about. And I couldn't think of anybody better to invite than her. Dr. Noss, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
We ask you on today because, as I understand it, You were an acquaintance with Mr. Ivins, who we hear committed suicide over a pending indictment over this anthrax scare we had a few years back.
Yes.
And in what capacity did you know him?
Well, we met at a conference in 1991, and we were a little interested in each other's work. He helped me out with some research I was doing on Zimbabwe's anthrax epidemic. And then years later, I became interested in side effects from the anthrax vaccine, and the anthrax vaccine was the main thing he did in his career, was working on new vaccines and learning more about the vaccines that existed. And so there again, we kind of shared information. I had not spoken with him for about the last 6 years.
This is not exactly a big fraternity involved in this anthrax business, is it?
It used to be an extremely small number of people, a small number of articles, so that me, who had a full-time career in a different field, was able to read everything and become very cognizant with information about anthrax up until, I guess, about 2001, when suddenly lots of new labs were formed, lots of research was sponsored, and now, of course, there are hundreds or thousands of people who are knowledgeable about anthrax.
Well, I guess in a way that's...
It used to be just a, few dozen.
Can you explain briefly the Zimbabwe problem back when? Can you give us a little history on that?
The world's largest anthrax epidemic that anybody knows about occurred during the Rhodesian Civil War, at the very end, between 1978 and 1980. And mostly affected cattle, but there were 10,000 human cases and about 200 known deaths. I looked at the pattern of deaths, the way the illness spread, and wrote a paper back in 92 indicating that it was very unlikely that this was a natural occurrence, and it looked like a deliberate spread of disease.
Okay.
It only affected the black people in Rhodesia. It didn't affect any whites.
And Mr. Ivins was actually working on what, military applications of the use of anthrax?
Well, no, he was working on better vaccines for anthrax.
Okay. You knew this gentleman, and you said you haven't spoken to him in 6 years. Was he the type that was, as we're hearing from the mainstream media, he was unbalanced? He was, I heard one call him weird.
He was never like that when I knew him. I haven't known any mass murderers, so I can't tell you what the personality type was. But this was a very mild-mannered, funny, very friendly, very helpful guy who always wanted to do the right thing. He was concerned about the image of Fort Detrick in the community. He was concerned. He wanted his government to do the right thing. He was very religious. And I guess he was the antithesis of what one might anticipate to be a mass murderer.
Have you spoken with any others in the field about this situation since this all blew up a week ago?
I've been contacted by several of his old friends, former students, who have emailed me or put messages on my blog to say that they agree with me, that this was an extremely nice, gentle person who would never have done anything like this.
And the evidence that we have that we're hearing from the media is primarily from this person named Gene Dooley, I believe is the name. That's who we're hearing quoted.
Personality problems, yes. In terms of him, having all kinds of ideas and threats, that is all from Jane Dooley so far.
And she initially had said that she was a therapist of some kind.
That's correct.
But it turns out that she's not.
No, it looks like she was his therapist. It looks like she was a very inexperienced therapist who just got a college degree within the last year. Didn't have a master's level or PhD training, and so she may not have known how to interpret. Her comments were very non-professional, but none of us know her, none of us know the context in which she made those comments. I think what's maybe more important is the fact that Ivan's colleagues have said on the record that he was harassed and would spend a lot of time at his desk just crying and couldn't get any work done in the last weeks or months of his life. And so one has to wonder, you know, whether he was pushed into having a breakdown.
Harassed by whom?
Again, I have no direct knowledge, but his former colleagues have indicated that it might have been the FBI.
Oh. The anthrax scare that we had several years ago that they're pinning on him now, first of all, I don't have to explain to everybody. I've made my feelings known on this on the program, and I'm troubled by all of this. I'm troubled that they want to close this case the sooner the better and put it to bed without us hearing all of the facts. I think any time something like this is done in secrecy, it maybe even makes it look much worse than it actually is. But you would know, being an expert in this field, that the access to the anthrax stocks and all that he had, they claim that they're able to trace it to him unequivocally. Is that really the case?
There was a good article in today's New York Times by Scott Shane and Nicholas Wade, which explains that this flask or stockpile of anthrax that the FBI says they have traced to Ivan's that was in Ivan's lab actually was accessible to at least 10 other people at Fort Detrick, plus some other military laboratories and military contractors, as well as people who may have gone in and out. So although you can do very impressive forensics on the anthrax, now a lot of new techniques have been developed specifically for this case, and for that reason they actually may not stand up in court because there is no precedent and there is no validity to these new methods. But there are a number of new methods that have been developed to do what's this new field of microbial forensics, and they can get back perhaps as far as the flask it came from. But what they can never do with that type of science is indicate which person took it out of the flask.
Okay. And so that leaves with, as you mentioned, at least 10 other scientists who possibly had or definitely had access to this particular vial of anthrax stock or this type of anthrax stock.
Yes.
How does anthrax actually work on your body, on your lungs? How exactly can you explain it to those of us?
You inhale it. You inhale the spore. Anthrax makes a spore, which is more common for fungi to do than bacteria. And so it's got this sort of protective coating around it, like armor. And once it gets inside your body, it is taken up by macrophage cells from the lung. And within the macrophages, some of these spores will germinate and now form bacteria that start growing. The bacteria make toxins, and it is thought that pretty much all the damage that is done is due to these toxins. But the entire pathogenesis, the way anthrax kills you, has not been 100% defined yet.
And it's very lethal, isn't it? I mean, once you have exposure to anthrax, what are your chances of getting through it?
Actually, all the people whose cases were found relatively early survived it. The people who died were extremely late stage. It used to be thought that the fatality was 90%, but in the letters, the fatality of inhalation anthrax was 44%. And all the people who were exposed but who didn't get sick and were given antibiotics, and that was up to 30,000 people, none of them came down with it. So it's actually a pretty rare disease.
How would it get into the late stages? It manifests itself in a certain way that a person would become...
You would think, right. Well, the two postal workers from Washington, D.C. apparently were seeking medical care, but they were misinformed by CDC or others that there was no way postal workers could have been exposed at that stage, so they weren't treated. The woman in Connecticut and the woman in New York City, you know, basically were found dead. And the fellow in Florida again, he got sick in another state. He drove home with his wife, and so it took him quite a while to get to the hospital, and he was moribund when he arrived. And he had a very smart doctor who made the diagnosis quickly.
That was the fellow that worked for the magazine, wasn't it? For
yes.
I can't think what the name of it is, but the National Enquirer or something.
AMN, correct.
Okay. Well, in your professional opinion, and I'm not going to ask you to make a judgment on this, but do you think the FBI can close this and say, we're so sure this is what happened, we can put this to bed now completely with a complete assurance that we've told the American public exactly what happened and have a 99% chance of that being the case? Do you think they can say that?
If they can put him at the scene of the crime, which means at those mailboxes where they were mailed, where the letters were mailed at the times they were mailed, and if they can show that he was competent to make the anthrax and any additive in the anthrax material, and there's a lot of questions. The FBI has put out some information that there was no additive, but initially everybody was of the impression that there was, in fact, an additive in the anthrax spores. And that's very important, because if there's no additive, it might be relatively easy to produce. And if there is a fancy additive that causes the spores to repel each other, that might be very difficult to do, and the knowledge how to do it would be held by an extremely small number of people. So if we can resolve that issue, and if we can make sure, the other problem is, you see, if in fact the FBI has hounded this man and is really just trying to close the case, then can we rely on the quality of the forensic and other evidence that the FBI has compiled?
What reason do you think the FBI would have to just go forward with it? Just so that they can, in many criminal cases, hey, we got somebody, it's over, it's done with, we can close the case. Is there any reason for national security for having to keep this secret?
I think that some of it needs to be kept secret and some of it doesn't. That's just my opinion. I don't think that the recipe for how to produce dried anthrax needs to be on the front pages. But I think that a scientific discussion of whether the forensic evidence has what it takes, whether this issue of the additive is resolved to everybody's satisfaction, I think that does need to be done in a somewhat public way without necessarily discussing the actual composition of the additive. I think it's a very tricky situation, because you don't want to invite people to copycat this. But at the same time, if the most crucial evidence is going to be classified and cannot be put into the public domain, how can you possibly achieve justice in a courtroom or in the court of public opinion in a tremendously important case like this?
Not just necessarily to clear this man's name for the sake of his family or whatever, but if it isn't him, the perpetrator of this would still be at large if we don't know for a fact.
That's absolutely true. Plus, the anthrax attack led to $50 billion in biodefense spending, which we may or may not have needed to spend, and helped push the country into a war. And those issues are terribly important to investigate.
Those are the issues that bother me tremendously. That's why, I mentioned before, I'm not a conspiracy-type guy, but that's the reason that this was used to push us into war troubles me a great deal, and I know it troubles a lot of people. Dr. Nass, I want to thank you very much for being with us on the program today. You have, anthraxvaccine.blogspot.com, right? Is that where you're at on that?
That's correct.
I'll post that on our chat room. Lots of good reading on there, and for those of you that want to know more about this, Dr. Nass, I want to thank you very much for being on the program. And if something big breaks on this, why, I'd like to reserve the right to call you again.
Thanks, and I appreciate you bringing it up.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Meryl Nass from Bar Harbor, Maine. She just got home from working at the clinic today, so she is a renowned expert on the anthrax vaccines. And this troubles me. This whole thing does trouble me. And as many of you know, I am most definitely not a conspiracy theory type guy. I'll do anything that I can to avoid getting involved in a conspiracy discussion, because I'm one of those people that I have to have the facts in front of my face or I'm just not buying it. But somehow I am just not comfortable with the government explanation of this anthrax case, as I believe a lot of you are not. Something about it does not smell right, and when you add that to the fact that this Bush administration, with the likes of Dick Cheney, they have repeatedly lied and coerced the American public. Something here just isn't right. And now, I'm not necessarily saying that the administration was behind the anthrax killing. However, isn't it all very convenient that they used the anthrax scare to help gin up their case for war? And John McCain was in on that. And then when we finally are given some sort of an explanation for the whole thing, the alleged perpetrator just happens to have committed suicide. How convenient that is for everybody. You know, Bush, don't forget that Bush wanted to fly these fake UN planes over Iraq in hopes that Saddam would shoot at them. Cheney wanted to dress American soldiers up to shoot at each other so it would look like he could gin up a war against Iran. Bush wanted to fire a cruise missile into Al Jazeera headquarters. Don't forget all these things that the Bush administration was ready and willing to do to push their agenda. That's why I think this thing stinks. And I hope that they will not allow this case to be closed. I hope the American people will demand that this not be closed, because, like I said, it's important that if they're pushing this off on us as some explanation that this is what happened with this Mr. Ivins, and he's not the perpetrator, that means the person that did it is still out among us and could do it again. And it is of the utmost importance. And as like Dr. Noss said, $50 billion we spent on this kind of thing and we didn't have to? I don't know. Anyway, it does stink. And I think we'll hear more about it. I think the push is on to shut it up, to close it down by the Bush administration. They know they used it to gin up the war, but I would like to know what the facts are. And, you know, the FBI and CIA and everybody solved some pretty doggone amazing cases over the years. I don't know why they couldn't solve this as well. We're going to pause for news coming up right now at the top of the hour. Gosh, news time already. Where did that hour go? You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. And we'll be back with you in just 3-4 minutes. So get yourself something cold to drink. Listen to the news. We'll be right back.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Another day of protests in California by state workers who watched as the governor cut their pay down to the federal minimum last week. And what he says is an attempt to save money as a budget stalemate continues in the state legislature. Critics say it is a political stunt that takes workers' pay hostage. On Monday, State Controller John Chang, who last week vowed to defy Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's executive order, said that it will take 6 months to adjust the state's computer system to start paying workers a minimum wage. He told the Sacramento Bee that adjusting the system could result in pay discrepancies that could eventually lead to lawsuits. Members of the Service Employees International Union have organized protests up and down the state. Many demonstrations will occur before and after work and during lunch breaks. The state legislature is 8 weeks late in passing the state budget. The Laborers Union has launched a grassroots campaign to mobilize support for a massive investment in rebuilding the U.S. infrastructure. Doug Cunningham reports.
Laborers President Terry O'Sullivan says the U.S. will fall behind economically unless we rebuild our roads, bridges, airports, and railroads. The Laborers' Petition to Rebuild America campaign aims to get at least 1 million signatures supporting the huge investment needed to rebuild America's infrastructure. O'Sullivan says current methods of financing roads, railroads, bridges, and airport construction are inadequate. He says we have to change our model of financing these projects to pay for what he says are at least $1.6 trillion in needed repairs. The Laborers Union says doing this work will generate many good-paying jobs while also making an investment in America's future. To do this politically, O'Sullivan says a bipartisan movement must rally behind it. The Laborers' Campaign to Rebuild America includes a print and broadcast media advertising effort in Washington, D.C., Denver, and other cities.
Good news for some Freightliner workers who were laid off from a Cleveland plant in June. The company plans to recall 650 workers and add a second shift. The workers are being called back to work on August 18th, based on an increase in orders for the class of Freightliner manufactured at the plant. 1,500 workers were laid off by the company in June when the second shift was eliminated. A grocery strike has been averted in Rhode Island and Massachusetts as Shaw's Supermarkets and the United Food and Commercial Workers came to an agreement this weekend on a new 5-year contract. The union says the contract was overwhelmingly approved by members. A federal mediator was called in this weekend as the two sides failed to find common ground and the potential for a 2-state walkout rose on the horizon. The new contract covers 5,200 workers at 38 stores and includes a pay raise and an increase in company contributions to health and retirement benefits.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Every vet respects John McCain's war record. It's his record in the Senate that I have a problem with. He wants us to keep spending $10 billion a month in Iraq, just like Bush. That's money we could use to build schools and roads and create needed jobs here at home. He even took sides with Bush against increasing health care benefits for veterans. People should let John McCain know. His agenda is not what we need. Not now.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Wow, did you see the Dow Jones up 331 points today? Amazing, one day, 331. Tell me there isn't a huge amount of some sort of manipulation going on to there. Hey, and I'm not the cynic. I am not. Many of you know I'm not. It's just that here we are, Americans all over, strapped for cash, don't have a pot right now. Fuel prices still sky high. People wondering how they're going to pay their heating bills this winter. Wages are flat. Inflation is up. Prices are up. And yet the stock market's up 331 points today. Go figure. I don't know. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll be taking a break in just a couple of minutes. I know, another break, but we have to do that technically to get a hold of our guest. Tyson Slocum's going to come up from citizens.org, and we're going to talk about the drill, drill, drill mantra that we're hearing so much. Somebody needs to write a song about that drill, drill, drill. Maybe they have already. I don't know. Maybe they have come up with a nice drill, drill, drill song. Maybe I'll work on that tonight. But, you know, we could write a nice ballad, something about drilling and saving America and how it will lower our gasoline prices to $1.20 a gallon again and save us from dependency on foreign oil. I think that'd be a great thing. Yes, indeed. I don't know. We do have some fun on here, kidding around anyway. But we will talk with Tyson here just coming up in a minute. See who's going to profit off this drilling offshore. Have you seen any of this about the Hess? We have a lot of Hess gas stations around here in Southwest Florida. Hess connected Amtrak worker gave $28,500 to the campaign. We're talking about some bundling here. We'll talk about that a little bit later when we have more time. But some odd things going on in the McCain campaign as far as bundling money with the Hess people. Hey, let's do another song here by John Lord, our friend from Brussels, Belgium, and we'll be right back with our guest. Kind of a European sound on these, I think. Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. And as promised, a gentleman that's been with us many times in the past that always got something interesting to tell us, Tyson Slocum from citizen.org. And that is just citizen.org, right, Tyson?
That's right. The organization is Public Citizen.
That's right. All right. And we invited Tyson to come on. I know a lot of you are confused, puzzled, confused, perplexed, all that about the oil situation. It's down $2 a barrel today, $2.24 down to $1.1917, coming down from a high of $1.47 not so long ago. And we're hearing the Republican mantra of drill, drill, drill. That's why they're still in Washington, even after. Can you imagine congressmen staying in Washington and actually working to give speeches on an empty House floor? Anyway, Tyson, thanks for joining us today. And we wanted to have you on. I know you're an expert in this field, to kind of give us an overall situation of why is the oil, first of all, dropped almost $30 a barrel here in the past month.
Well, the biggest reason was the bankruptcy of a major crude oil trader called SEM Group, which is in Oklahoma. And on around July 11th, they declared bankruptcy. And shortly thereafter, we saw crude oil plunge about 14%, down from about $145 a barrel to around $125. And that's because the company had about $2.5 billion worth of contracts that their creditors took over and immediately liquidated in order to pay off the margin calls. And so you had a huge sell-off prematurely of crude oil futures contracts that pulled the floor out from the market and pulled prices down. But that said, I think we should see prices probably rebound back up higher, unfortunately. And so that's why some of the reforms that Senator Obama and others are talking about are so critically important to start investing now in alternatives to our addiction to oil, to hold big oil companies accountable by either repealing subsidies that they currently receive or by enacting a windfall profits tax. And increasing drilling is not a solution because increasing drilling will not lower prices. That's what the President Bush's own Department of Energy has concluded in an analysis earlier this year, that opening up all areas subject to the offshore moratorium will not lower prices because the United States is not Saudi Arabia. We simply lack the spare capacity in our reserves. Our spare capacity is so small relative to global supply and demand that it's just a drop in the giant sea of oil.
What is it, something like 3%, or is it even less than that?
2.5% 2.5% of the world's reserves.
Well, and explain something to us. Our drilling rights, let's say off the East Coast, they go out how far?
They go off pretty far.
200 miles? Is it 200?
Yeah, America's... you know, territorial jurisdiction extends pretty far.
But there's no guarantee that if ExxonMobil, Chevron, any of the countries, companies drill out there, there's no guarantee that that oil, even if they hit a bonanza out there, there's no guarantee it's going to end up in the USA, is it?
It probably will. I mean, there's no guarantee there's going to be American companies doing the drilling. Right now, more than half of the oil companies in the Gulf of Mexico are foreign. But that said, most of the oil that is drilled in the United States is destined for the U.S. market. That's because we're such a gigantic market. One out of every four barrels of oil in the world are consumed here in the United States.
But it goes on the world market as far as price is concerned.
That's correct.
So, even if we do discover a huge amount of oil, that doesn't necessarily mean that, you're going to pull up to the pump and get a buck off your gallon of gas anytime soon.
Right, and there aren't going to be any huge discoveries. There's, you know, we have explored geologically all of the available areas, so there's no magical deposit of crude oil hiding somewhere in the United States, or for that matter, the rest of the world, which is why it's so important that we start making investments now to get ourselves off of oil, and that's where investments in efficiency and renewable energy will be so critical.
Yeah, and I want to get into that in just a moment about alternative energies and what the oil companies are actually spending, how serious they are about that. But there is no real incentive for the oil companies right now to go out at the moment and drill a bunch of new wells. I mean, they're making record profits. And they've got production going along just fine. There's no shortage at the moment. Is there a real incentive for them to go out and just drill right now?
Well, I mean, they do have an incentive to drill more because, you know, if you're pulling oil out of the ground that's worth $120 a barrel, that's pretty lucrative. But we're seeing the companies invest more money in stock buybacks than they are in traditional capital investment. I mean, since 2005, ExxonMobil has spent $95 billion buying back stock. That is a huge misallocation of capital. That just gives you a small idea of just how much cash flow Exxon and other big oil companies have.
And are they really serious at all about spending money on alternative energy? They advertise it a lot.
No, they are first and foremost oil and gas companies, and they will continue being oil and gas companies, which is why if they're not going to be investing their record earnings into things that are going to make us more energy independent, they ought to agree to pay slightly higher rates of taxation to help finance the needed investments in renewable energy and energy efficiency that we all need. I mean, I think a lot of listeners out there would love to be able to afford to install solar panels on the roof of their home, or make energy efficient improvements to their home, or afford to purchase a super fuel efficient hybrid. Those are all investments that the government should be helping American families make.
And they're items that create jobs as well. The job market would be helped, the economy would be helped overall, and the American public would be helped on this. Do you see an improvement anytime soon in us finally getting serious about alternative energy? I still don't see a big movement like a John Kennedy coming up and saying we'll do this within the next decade. I know Obama's kind of made a challenge, but Al Gore has rather. Do you think we can do that?
Yeah, but it's going to take a commitment of financial resources, and you know, the president, Bush, has run up a budget deficit this year alone of nearly $500 billion. So with the kind of fiscal mismanagement that we've seen from Republicans, it's going to be difficult to come up with the money, which is why I think asking oil companies to help finance these initiatives makes a heck of a lot of sense.
Come on, Tyson, you know we can always get all the money we need from the Chinese. We're borrowing a couple $1 billion a day.
That's right.
Yeah, I think that's the way they look at it. It's an endless source of endless source of money coming from China right now. Of the people running now, do you think Obama has is ready to be serious about doing this? Do you think he's serious about energy, or are we getting pretty much political fluff again?
I think he's serious. I think he understands energy, and I think that he understands that you have to address energy policy if we want the American economy to succeed.
Well, I hope so. I hope our political season will be all worth it when it's all over and done with, and we can have somebody in the White House who can do something meaningful about this this problem, and it is a problem. The economy is being drastically affected by it. There's so many people, come winter, they're going to have a terrible problem. You think the prices are going to rebound back up again from where they're at now?
Oh yeah, Dude, it's just a question of when. And right now, you know, home heating oil prices and natural gas are projected to be at record highs this winter. So it's going to be a very, very tough winter for folks if it's cold out.
Let me ask you, you know, you're in the business of getting the word out to the media. Let me ask you a question. You mentioned the SEMCOM out of Oklahoma, was it?
SEM Group
out of Oklahoma?
Yep.
Why didn't I read that on the front page of my local paper or the L.A. Times?
Well, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal, but it hasn't been picked up really since then. But the Journal did a big article on July 24th. Saying that experts believe that the drop in crude oil prices was due to the bankruptcy of this major energy trader. So it has been reported, but in the conservative business press, not necessarily in the mainstream media.
Yeah, I haven't seen it on TV. I miss that one. I study this stuff every day, and I miss it. So you really do believe that the speculation that's been bandied about is a major, major cause of oil spiking as high as it was.
There's no question that it's a contributing factor. I mean, underlying supply and demand has, of course, driven prices higher. But speculators have definitely made a bad situation even worse.
Yes.
And that's why I support both the efforts of McCain and Obama to rein in these speculators by restoring regulatory oversight over these important markets.
Well, they'll get fought tooth and nail from big oil on that, won't they?
and from the investment community, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, all the big investment banks will also fight that.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see who ends up winning that battle. Tyson, I want to thank you so much for being with us again today. I always enjoy hearing your take on something. Our listeners always respond to, by email and calls as to what you've had to say. And we'll look forward to talking again about our energy problems again in the near future. And again, your website is citizen.org, right?
That's correct. Public Citizen.
And a lot of good reading on there, and I recommend it to everyone. Tyson Slocum, thanks for being on the program today.
Guys, my pleasure.
Wow, are we getting a storm outside the studio here? Whoop-de-doo. good old-fashioned Florida afternoon. Yeah, it's that time, 4:20 in the afternoon. You can just about count on it raining every day at this time, but it's really getting the old thunder going right now. If you don't live near a big body of water, you've never heard real thunder before. When that thunder comes rolling in off the Gulf of Mexico and it bellows and reverberates off the water, oh man, and we're pretty close to the water here, so it you really hear the thunder and lightning. Our official Guy James Show puppies, Kukla and Sophie, they're running around the studio here. They don't care for the thunder very much. They've got their little paws over their ears right now and looking at it like, hey, Dad, protect us from this. And, of course, we will. you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I think we're going to take a quick break at the moment, and we'll be right back.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
2 days past 18, he was waiting for the bus and his army green sat down in a booth. Cafe there gave his order to a girl with a bow in her hair. He's a little shy, so she gave him a smile, and he said, would you mind sitting down for a while and talking to me? I'm feeling a little low. She said, I'm off in an hour and I know where we can go. So they went down on the pier. He said, I bet you got a boyfriend, but I don't care. I got no one to send a letter to. Would you mind if I sent one back here to you? I game. The Lord's Prayer said and the anthem sang. A man said, folks, would you bow your heads for a list of local Vietnam dead? Crying all alone under the stands was a piccolo player in the marching band, and one name read, and nobody really cared. But a pretty little girl with a bow in her head. I cried, never gonna hold the hand of another guy. Too young for him, they told her, waiting for the love of a traveling soldier. Our love will never end, waiting for the soldier to come back again. Never more to be alone when the letter says, soldier's coming.
Impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
Oh, it's true.
Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
Hey, I told you that George Bush has got no shame. They fly up to Ellison Air Force Base in Alaska and spoke to the soldiers, Mr. Bush did, and the White House included Senator Ted Stevens in the event. That's right, a man practically in a striped suit, and okay, innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. I see he's trying everything he can to slant things in his favor. Stevens trying to get the venue changed to Alaska. He can have his trial there where he can pack the jury with people who he's passed out favors to, no doubt. Evidently everybody in Alaska's gotten, and not necessarily everybody. I see that he is favored to win his primary race, but then in the general election, his opponent is whipping him bad in the polls right now. So maybe, the Alaskan people will throw that man out on his ass where he belongs, and all of his friends up there too, I would hope. There's politician friends. So, but even Bush. Bush was... Had Stevens at this event in Alaska, and they've got no shame. The White House has continued to stand by Stevens. And when pressed by reporters last week on whether Stevens would still travel with Bush on his Alaska trip, Press Secretary Dana Perino stood firm, stating that the invitation did not change with Stevens' indictment. So Bush doesn't care who he's seen with. I mean, he was seen holding hands with the Saudi Arabian prince. Who the hell cares? And this much. We touched on this just a little earlier, and I'm jumping around here, but have you noticed how much hay, and again, with the stupid American public, have you noticed how much hay the McCain campaign seems to be making, or trying to make at least, off of the comment Obama made about keeping your engines tuned up right? and proper tire inflation on in your tires for your car. Really unbelievable that people are this ignorant. I heard Newt Gingrich saying that that was poppycock. The Bush administration themselves estimates that expanded offshore drilling could increase oil production by 200,000 barrels per day by 2030. We use about 20 million barrels per day, so that would meet about 1% of our demand 2 decades from now. Okay? 1% is what the drilling offshore could get us. Efficiency experts say that keeping tires inflated can improve your gas mileage 3%, and regular maintenance can add another 4%. And so a lot of drivers already follow that advice. But if everybody did, we could immediately reduce demand several percentage points. In other words, Barack Obama is exactly right. Now, McCain can go ahead with a silly-ass campaign that he's got going against Obama about keeping passing out these... By the way, you can go to McCain website and you can buy one of those air pressure gauges for $25. $25. It says something about Obama on it, not Obama's energy campaign, energy strategy or something it says on it. I don't know about you, but you have to wonder, where the hell has John McCain been all of his life? I'm born and raised in the country. I was a farm boy. And we all knew how to drive by the time we were old enough to get our license. We didn't necessarily need to go through that nonsense. But you had to go do the book learning, you know, and take driver's education. Everybody was required to take driver's education before you could get your driver's license in Ohio. And one of the things they taught you, and this is a long time ago, after the Model T, they taught you to keep your tires properly inflated in order to, A, save wear and tear on the tires, and, B, get maximum gas mileage on your car. The same thing included with keeping your car tuned. So this silliness that McCain is indulging in here, it makes him look stupid, don't you think? I hate to overuse that word, stupid, but I am talking about Republicans a lot, and, and speaking of stupid, any of you have this going on in your home state? I know Indiana had an issue with it. I don't know who else. Maybe Oklahoma. I'm not sure about leasing out your interstate highways, your turnpikes. We've got a toll road here in Florida. It's part of Interstate 75. It's the very last section of not quite the last section, but almost the last section of I-75 that comes from the upper tip of Michigan, and it's called Alligator Alley. And it costs $3 to go across Alligator Alley. It goes from Naples, Florida, across to Fort Lauderdale, really. I don't know how many miles it is. Must be 75, 80 miles. Anyway, it costs $3. They're talking about leasing this out to a foreign country. Going to lease Alligator Alley out to a foreign country, and there are estimates that the toll may raise all the way up to $10. What gives with this? The state lowered a lot of taxes on the fat cats, so now they don't have enough money to take care of these roads. I tell you, I know people don't like to pay taxes, but we got to have these roads. And the people around here, a lot of people use Alligator Alley. Would they really rather pay $10 to go across it than $3? Again, the state's actually considering doing this, leasing the thing out to a foreign entity. I don't know. And have you seen the latest polls? Interesting. The polls are all over the place. Some of the national polls now have McCain ahead. They're all over the place. I think McCain is not ahead. I think McCain, if they had the election right today, that Obama would win it by 5 or 6 points. I honestly do believe that. Obama is behind in Florida right now. I hope Obama can take Florida, but it shows that he's down about 6 points in Florida at this time. I have to wonder, And I agree with some of the bloggers. If Barack Obama was white and his name was John Smith, what would he be ahead? 30 points? You know he would. It is a race issue. Like somebody sent me an email today and said Barack Obama's skin color and name shouldn't be under scrutiny. The intelligence of the American voting populace is the real issue. And I happen to agree with that. I think if Barack Obama were a white man out there right now, he would be 20, 30 points ahead. I think McCain is that bad of a candidate, and I think America is still that racist, so we shall see. God, I hope the American public proves me wrong. I don't have much hope for that, but I do hope they prove me wrong. I would just love it. Love to be just dead wrong on that. By the way, give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254, here on the Guy James Show today, a stormy afternoon here in southwest Florida. Yeah, okay, the phone's still working. Have you seen this story that Muhammad Atta was in the United States, not Baghdad, at the time that forged letter came up? Ron Suskind's got this new book out, and he's accusing the Bush administration of forging the letter linking 9/11 hijacker Muhammad Atta and Iraq to help gin up their justification for war. And the charges are pretty explosive, but shortly after news of the letter's existence broke in Britain, though, Newsweek cited U.S. officials and a leading Iraqi document that the document is most likely a forgery. Fair enough, but there's another amazing aspect to that article. The problem with this, say U.S. law enforcement officials, is that the FBI has compiled a highly detailed timeline for Atta's movement throughout the spring and summer of 2001 based on a mountain of documentary evidence, including airline records, ATM withdrawals, and hotel receipts. And those records show that Atta was crisscrossing the United States during that period, making only one overseas trip, 11-day visit to Spain, that didn't begin until 6 days after the date of the Iraqi memo. So, for argument's sake, let's presuppose that Suskind's claims are genuine and that the document was a forgery with White House origins, which he's claiming. If true, then this administration is a whole lot more clueless and reckless than just being complicit and creating this forgery. They crafted a fake letter placing Atta in Baghdad when our own intelligence community had a mountain of documentary evidence, according to them, that was verifiable and traceable that Atta was in the U.S. And so I think you get my point here. If this is true, then not only was the Bush administration illegally manufacturing a false connection between Al-Qaeda, 9/11, and Iraq, but also they were neglecting and ignoring our own overwhelming evidence from the FBI that the lead hijacker was actually on U.S. soil at the time that they said he wrote this letter in Baghdad. And so if this is true, it's a double criminal act of complete ignorance and conscience. It's malfeasance in office. So, call it what you will. That's pretty amazing that, not by now. Not by now, listen. And we see that the FBI was told. The FBI was told to blame the anthrax scare on Al-Qaeda by White House officials. Yeah, this is from the Daily News, New York Daily News. This article from the New York Daily News, and this is one with Dr. Nass was talking about. In the immediate aftermath of the 2001 anthrax attacks, White House officials repeatedly pressed FBI Director Robert Mueller to prove it was a second wave assault by Al-Qaeda. But investigators ruled that out, the Daily News has learned. After the October 5, 2001 death from anthrax exposure of Sun photo editor Robert Stevens, Mueller was beaten up during President Bush's morning intelligence briefing for not producing, they mean mentally beaten up, for not producing proof the killer spores were made that were the handiwork of terrorist mastermind Osama bin Laden, according to a former aide. They really wanted to blame somebody in the Middle East, the retired senior FBI official told the New York Daily News. On October 15, 2001, President Bush said there may be some possible link to bin Laden, adding, "I wouldn't put it past him." And Vice President Cheney also said that bin Laden's henchmen were training how to deploy and use these kinds of substances. So you start to piece it all together, said Cheney. Well, I'll tell you something, Dick Cheney. It would be my opinion, and let me reiterate, I am not a conspiracy type of guy. But we're given, if given the choice of whether Osama bin Laden were trying to get this anthrax to hurt people in this country, in this particular case, and if there's a choice between him and you, Dick Cheney, I'd pick you. I would. That's how low my esteem, how low my regard is for Dick Cheney. Do I think Dick Cheney would be involved in an anthrax scare, a plot to help gin up the war so that they could use this and get us into a war so his military friends could make lots of money? Do I think Dick Cheney would do that in a New York minute? I think Dick Cheney would do that. I don't say that lightly. The man is the Vice President of the United States. He's been involved in many political positions in this country. He is held in high esteem by many people, I'm sorry to say. But do I think he's that kind of a man that would do that sort of thing? Absolutely. Absolutely. Dick Cheney is a thug. And we know some of the things that he's been involved in. We know that he was involved in the Valerie Plame thing. We know that there isn't much that this man wouldn't do to achieve his political goals. We know there's very little this man wouldn't do. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We were talking about, oh yeah, somebody sent me this, and I wanted to, who was it sent me? My God, I forgot to write down who said it. Voting Republican. I will vote Republican because of their historic votes on all these issues. It's why I will vote Republican, because they voted against women's suffrage. They voted against collective bargaining. They voted against child labor laws, Social Security, immigration, Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, indigent legal services. Republicans voted against AmeriCorps, unemployment compensation, welfare. They voted against the minimum wage, school lunch programs, Head Start, progressive taxation, public radio and television, affirmative action, Peace Corps, and environmental regulation. That's why a lot of people voted Republican, because they voted against all of those things. And the five conservative values that they're always talking about, number one, hating liberals. Number two, caring about little other than themselves and their wallets. Number three, demeaning minorities, immigrants, and foreigners. Number four, promoting the discrimination against homosexuals. And number five, promoting the proliferation of handguns and assault rifles. So, one more reason to be very, very proud if you are a Republican. God. Hey, do you see where the airlines are starting to nitpick us to death? My favorite airline, JetBlue. I've always been treated so well by JetBlue. They are starting to charge $7 for a pillow and blanket kit. Now, I never use a pillow and a blanket on an airplane, but $7 for a pillow and blanket kit. Now that makes me wonder, if you take a carry-on bag plus one personal item, like a purse or a bag to carry your personal items in, would that count a blankie and a pillow? Would that count as a personal item as well? Uh-huh. Because you're actually buying this pillow and blanket if you get on JetBlue. The carrier's done away with the recycled blankets and pillows used on its flights and has started offering a eco-friendly travel blanket and pillow that can be purchased for $7 on flights longer than 2 hours. The pair comes in a kit with a $5 coupon to home furnishings retailer Bed Bath & Beyond. Well, isn't that nice? When's the last time you bought anything for $5 in Bed Bath & Beyond? The carrier claims the pillow and blanket feature a fabric technology developed by Clean Brands, LLC, that blocks pesky critters like dust mites, mold spores, pollen, and pet dander. Well, is that a big danger on the airplanes anyway? I didn't know that. JetBlue already offers free snooze kits on overnight flights from the West that include an eye shade and earplugs. But the blanket and pillow kit is the latest in a string of a la carte items. The company says they're providing a revenue boost to help offset the soaring price of jet fuel. Aren't they just nickel-diming us to death? I don't know. I had a few bucks on the fare. My God. And who else did I read? Is it American? One of them is going to start charging, and others have, a buck for a soda, a buck for a bottle of water. Well, let me tell you how cheap I am. Not cheap. Thrifty. Out of necessity now. I'm not a natural Scotsman here, but out of necessity. You're not allowed to take any drinking. I always got to have some water with me. I'm not one of those ones that carries a water bottle around, but I want a drink close by. So, you're not allowed to take any drinking water through security at the airport, and I fly quite a little bit. And so you get in there, and then you get through security, and your only choice is you got to pay $2.69 for a damn bottle of water. Now, going out on your trip, $2.69, coming back, $2.69, that's, you know, with tax and everything, it's almost $6 for water, just water to drink. So I got to thinking, why don't I take an empty 12-ounce bottle with me? One that I can recycle, you know, a plastic bottle. I take a 12-ounce bottle with me, empty. They can't say anything about that. And then once I get through security, I just go to the ice-cold water fountain and fill that sucker up and save myself almost $6 on a round trip. Aha. Uh-huh. Well, you can bet I'll be doing that on my next trip. Yeah. That's how I am, really. I'm proud of it, too. Anyway, hey, you got to. You got to save a buck where you can nowadays, and I'm no different than anybody else. times are tough here in the Guy James Show. And that brings up a point I wanted to make. I realize that several of you in the recent past have canceled your subscriptions to the show. As you know, if you go to theguyjamesshow.com, there's a place on there you can subscribe to the show, $10, $25, $50 a month, whatever you can do. We appreciate that very much. And I've gotten some notes from people and notified by PayPal lately that several of you have canceled your subscription, and I've heard from every one of you. And you do not have to apologize to me. I know how things are. I'm feeling it myself. I know you are. And if you can't afford to donate contribute to the show anymore, why, you know, buy your groceries. That comes first and foremost. Some of you who can and aren't, well, shame on you. But I just want everybody to know that we appreciate your contributions to the show. That's all that keeps it going. And I also want to know, let those of you who have had to cancel for financial reasons at home that I completely understand, and please don't think anything of it. I don't think any less of anybody for having to do that. So, as I said, I understand. 866-546-5254. I think we're going to pause for a break and be back in just a couple of minutes now. Don't go away.
A perfect day, the sun is sinking low as evening falls. Gentle breezes blow.
Ah, what a nice tune from the Eagles. Man, I love the Eagles. I do. They're timeless. After all these years, come out with another new CD not so very long ago, and I love it. I do. Oh, we've got, what, 90 days? About 90 days till the election coming up. I know that 99% of my listeners may have decided how they're going to vote. I don't know if you've all decided you're going to vote for Obama, but I trust that 99% of my listeners have decided not to vote for John McCain. Either way, that's okay. I hope you all vote for Barack Obama because he is the candidate that's against John McCain, and John McCain does not deserve to be even considered for the presidency of the United States, not in my opinion. I don't think he has the qualifications. I don't think he has the temperament. And to be frank, I don't think he has good enough health to be there either. So a lot of things working against John McCain. He's just not quite a good enough candidate, in my opinion. Let's take a quick call, okay? Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Kevin.
Hi, Kevin. We got about 2 minutes.
What is that Eagles song? That's what I want to know.
Called It's Your World Now.
Okay.
It's off their Long Road Out of Eden now album.
Okay. But thanks for the info.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Okay, then. Bye.
Should have said that, shouldn't I? It's your world now. Long Road Out of Eden. Is that, in fact, I'm sitting here holding their, it's a double album. Isn't it double? Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, two. They got 11 songs on one, 9 on another. Killer. Just killer. Love both those CDs. Really do. Listener got that for me. I appreciate that very, very much. Love my music. What would we do without music? You know, I once had an aunt. I'm getting off of subject. What we usually talk about here, we don't have time to get in anything in depth, but I actually had an aunt. She's gone now, so I can talk about her. That didn't like music. Any music. Any kind of music. Not country, not pop, not big band, not rock and roll, nothing. If you had the radio on around that woman, and you were playing music, which I often do, she would ask you to turn it off. I don't want to listen to that noise. Only person I have ever known in my life that didn't like any music whatsoever. Do you know anybody? You know anybody like that? That was a strange one. See, I guess she was strange in a couple of other ways as well. But, boy, I shouldn't be giving out my family history here, huh? But I just thought that was a bizarre world to run into somebody who just didn't like music at all. Anyway, music is such a wonderful thing in my life. I know it is for many of you as well. We've shared that in emails and so forth and on the program. I play a couple of instruments and sing a lot, and I don't know what life would be without it. I can't imagine. I just cannot imagine life without music. Anyway, thanks for listening today. It's been a pleasure, as always. Hope you enjoyed our guests today. I did enjoy them, and I've enjoyed being with you. And so, here we are, proud member of the Head On Radio Network. Mark, I believe, is in Europe today, and Bob's coming up a little later, so don't miss that.